everyone, and welcome back to Palestine Exists, a space where we deep dive into all things Palestine, from history and politics to culture, resistance, and the stories and names that deserve to be told. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by the headlines, frustrated by misinformation, or just eager to learn more about Palestine beyond the mainstream narrative, this is the place for you. And today is super extra special because I'm not alone, finally. I have two incredible co-hosts with me, brilliant, passionate, and always ready to bring the knowledge and the energy. We have Hiba and Lina, and of course, I'm Petra. So Hiba, Lina, whenever you guys are ready, just introduce yourselves.
Yeah, I'll go first. Hi, everyone. My name is Hiba. I am Lebanese, Southern Lebanese, and Palestinian. I'm from Nabatiya, if you guys know where that is in Lebanon. And my mom's father is from Ramleh in Palestine, which is occupied Israel, occupied Palestine. It's in Israel 48, Palestine 48. A little bit about me. I'm a girl's girl through and through. I support women's rights and their wrongs. And I've been advocating for Palestine and Lebanon as like from my earliest memories. Yeah, so that's a little bit about me.
Hi guys. Okay, so I am Lina, and as you can tell, like, this is clearly my first podcast because I am freaking nervous, but that's okay. I'm glad that I'm doing it with these two girls, because literally we have grown over the past 2 years, 4 years for Hiba. Like, we really do know each other at this point and wouldn't want to do it with anyone else. But yeah, my name is Lina. I am Palestinian. Both my parents are from Palestine. My mom is from Jaffa and my dad is from Nazareth. Like many diasporic Palestinians, the first thing, like Hiba said, like the first thing that I can like think of is me growing up just always knowing Palestine, knowing I'm Palestinian, and knowing that like our identity is kind of incomplete with the fact that we are just living in diaspora. And like, this is like literally my entire identity. And I know it's probably will resonate with most Palestinians that are also living in diaspora. And it's this idea that we've been, you know, stripped of our right to live inside of our homeland. And I think having a podcast to like kind of at least tell the world how, what it's like to be a Palestinian and advocate for the Palestinians living in Palestine right now is 100%. One of the best things ever. Something about myself, if you haven't already noticed, is I am a little bit awkward. Hopefully that will not show up during these podcasts. I absolutely love my country and I can't wait to share that with you guys.
Cute.
That was an amazing intro, Lina. Love that.
I freaking love you guys.
Okay, I'm excited. So today, we're going to be talking about something that's like often misunderstood, misrepresented, mm-hmm. like in the case of like settler colonialism in Palestine, like what it means, how it functions, and why it's different and unique. When people hear the word colonization, they often think of European empires expanding overseas, extracting wealth, governing foreign lands, and then eventually withdrawing or leaving. But settler colonialism, settler colonialism follows an entirely different logic, one of elimination and replacement. The goal isn't to exploit the indigenous people for labor or resources. Their goal is to remove them, erase them, and to take their place. Palestine is one of the clearest and most urgent examples of this ongoing process. Unlike classical colonialism, where foreign rule is meant to be temporary, settler colonialism is designed to be permanent. It isn't just about like controlling land. It's about claiming it as if no one else was ever there, which is very familiar to us. The indigenous population isn't just oppressed. They're actively displaced, denied rights, and oftentimes written out of the story. This is what makes Palestine unique when compared to other colonial experiences. While we can draw parallels to like the United States and Canada and South Africa, settler colonialism in Palestine is unfolding in real time with full international complicity and an active military occupation enforcing it. Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about this. We're going to unpack this with precision, examining historical foundations, that like ideological frameworks and real world implications. We're going to be exploring how the structure shapes everything from land policies to legal frameworks and an understanding, and why understanding this is essential to understanding Palestine today. So you can start.
Oh, that ate.
No, you ate.
No, that absolutely ate. Honestly, like, I feel like one of the, like Hiba said, like, it's one of these things that is like always talked about as if it's like controversial, or as if it's like weird to call it a colonial process, but it's really not. It's as clear cut as it could be. And one thing that you often see with Zionists and Zionism, it's like this whole idea of consistently trying to change the definitions of things. So as Hiba said, like when it comes to settler colonization, it holds a completely different process where you're going to essentially try to replace a group of people that is already living there, the indigenous group of people. And the reason why I said like it's weird that with Zionism it's considered to be like a confused process where you have the colonizer, which is Israel, the Zionist movement, which is a colonial movement, you know, trying to convince us that no, we're actually the indigenous people. The reason why I said it sounds, you know, kind of weird coming off, from it sounds off, because you know what, like you have the literal founding fathers of the state of Israel, people who came together to map out how they would colonize Palestine, and in the modern day you have people trying to convince us that no, it's not a colonial movement, it's more a reclamation of land, and we all know how,
and like they were coming home, like we're coming home.
Yeah, like right. Where the hell did that come from?
We're decolonizing.
Decolonizing. I mean, I think a good point to make for anyone who's American, who has, you know, who understands a bit about Palestine, but doesn't fully understand everything, the way that they try to erase their settler colonialism and try to map it a different way is the same way America did, right? We in elementary school were told, oh, you know, the cute little pilgrims came and they had a cute little dinner with the Native Americans and everyone lived happily ever after. We didn't do anything bad to them. We often hear that within the Zionist talking points too, you know, they're always saying we came, they didn't like us, but we wanted to share that land, we were here to share that land, and they didn't, and that's why we
they
had
denied
to do
all the peace deals. Like yeah.
So to tie it back to people who aren't fully aware of what Palestinians have gone through and what it truly means to them, just tie it into everything we've learned and we deconstructed within ourselves since we were kids.
So we can talk about like why settler colonialism is like kind of like what settler colonialism is, right? I kind of mentioned it earlier, but it's different than like in regular colonization. And so like even when it comes to like some narratives within like the Palestinian, like in Palestinian movement, or like some videos, and like I don't see this as much in academia, but you see this kind of within the narratives, it's like they kind of draw parallels to like native populations, mm-hmm. and like native people, and it's like, oh, it's exactly what happened in like with the indigenous people of America, or with the Aboriginal people in Australia. So we can see certain types of like comparisons, however it's not the same, because that was colonization, right? Like that was a clear-cut colonization. They were there temporarily, and while the atrocities that occurred were disgusting, it was genocide, and obviously native people are not liberated globally, and they should be. The reason why I bring this up is to say that in Palestine, like America and like Australia and the West, or all these places where you see colonization occurred, they're in a post-colonial period, mm-hmm. right? Like they're done, not like I don't want to say done, but like post-colonial,
isn't they like succeeded in their goal to colonize, like they're
right.
they're done right. with the colonial process. I freaking love that you're remembering all this stuff, because I'm like in my head.
So like when we talk about like post-colonialism and like active colonization, we see like the post-colonialism, mm-hmm. basically is like it's a period following decolonization as former colonies gain independence, but they're going to be remain shaped by the legacy of colonial rule, right? Mm-hmm. So like the characteristics of this include like economic and political influence from former colonizers. These persist through globalization, trade dependency, and like financial control. We see this with like examples like IMF, World Bank policies, etc. We see cultural strategies where like there are efforts to reclaim and reclaim these suppressed identities that were tarnished or harmed during the colonization period. You know, like they do mm-hmm. this also while navigating and like and still being under colonial rule, economic right. equality and political instability. This is a colonization and this is a post-colonization period, right?
Yeah.
Which is what America, Australia, like everything, all these like countries are in. And also like big freaking shout out to Edward Said, who quite literally was the framework for what post-colonial theory is about in academia. So we love him.
Absolutely anyways, love our Palestinian historians and writers. They
more genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward Said is so good. Anyways, so but what we see when it comes to like the present case of colonialism, which is like we're not post-colonial when it comes to Palestine because we're still actively being colonized. You'll right. see like land seizures yeah. and you see like these like economic domination where like multinational corporations exploit resources and labor from Palestine as well as like other countries in like the global south. But mm-hmm. They're funneling these profits to the global north. They have institutions like the IMF and the World Bank imposing economic policies that perpetuate dependency and poverty upon these populations. You have cultural imperialism and like you have settler colonialism, mm-hmm. like quite literally existing. And this is why I always try to make a distinction between the differences between like post-colonial and like active colonization. When you see basically settler colonialism is like when you see like the colonizers, they don't come to, you see this kind of like with British Mandate of Palestine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where when the British were here, like you had some populations, like there was like a whole women's like nurse and like kind of like a higher society type groups. They were like the Christians who would come and they'd want to like do the whole like education and like or re-education
missionaries and all yeah, that stuff.
Like,
yeah.
They left. Like they right. left. Mm-hmm. Right? So they did what they had to do and then after Israel declared independence from who? I don't know. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Honestly.
Yeah, like in short, if we're gonna compare yeah, like settler colonization, so no, you absolutely like explained it and like you ate with that. But like literally, the main thing that like we're trying to like point out here is that settler colonialism is different from like the overall framework of colonialism because it has that inherent goal to you know replace that population, but. Like the main difference is that with colonization, you had the resource exploitation in regards to the indigenous people. You had, you know, subordination rather than under settler colonization. You had a whole goal to displace or eradicate of the indigenous people. And that's the mm-hmm. that's the same thing. Like in terms of colonization, it didn't matter whether those missionaries came or didn't come. But it wasn't like the main goal. But in settler yeah. colonization, the main goal is to, you know, to settle and replace, right? So yeah. The role of migration is like the crucial part of settler colonization, as we saw with the Zionists, right? They never hid the fact that their main goal in their colonization of Palestine was with population transfers, mm-hmm. and you know we have. Countless people that we could read from the Zionist movements, people like David Ben-Gurion, who was the first prime minister of Israel. He never shied to call the movement a colonial movement. He never shied to talk about the goal to transfer the Palestinian population and replace it with a Jewish population. They never hid the fact that in order to meet this end goal, they needed to replace the Palestinian people. They needed to, you know, create this Jewish majority country. And you know, if they were going to settle for having any Arabs or Palestinians or any other minority in a group, they needed to exist as just that, a very small minority. They, you know, you'll notice like in the beginning of this conversation, we said, you know, when it comes to Israel or Israelis in the modern day, they're trying to convince us of this reality where, no, it wasn't a colonial movement. And I think this is where,
your average Palestinian gets, you know, kind of upset. It's like, well, who are you trying to convince? If you're trying to convince me, how come all of your literature is the main goal, the central goal to your movement, the Zionist movement, is to not only settle into the land, but kick out the indigenous people that were already there. So I mean, yeah, 100%, like, recognizing the difference between colonization and for anyone who's listening, like, don't let them try to, like, gaslight you in terms of the whole idea of what colonization is. I mean, there's a lot of, as Hiba mentioned, one of the Edward Said, like, he's a revolutionary regarding settler colonial, you know, studies and how it's inherent to Palestine.
It was post-colonial theory.
Oops, sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Lina, you're 100% right. And I feel like what you specifically stated, who are they trying to fool? I think something that gets, you know, pushed to the side was back in the day, right? Back in the 1900s or the 1870s, when Zionism came about, or political Zionism came about, mm-hmm. It was geared towards Europeans, right? And what was a quote-unquote good thing back then within the Europeans? Colonization. And that's why they basically said it with their full chest. Mm-hmm. We are going to go in and colonize Palestine, because the Europeans obviously approved of that. That's what the Europeans were doing in South and Africa and all of these other countries. Nowadays, now that it's frowned upon, they want to move away from it. So they're like, no, not really colonization. Not because that's not what they did, because right now in this day and age, it's frowned upon. Oh, yeah. You're a colonizer is a bad thing, you know?
We're in an era of truth and reconciliation for colonization. Like, we're not supposed to sit here and pretend that it's a good thing. So I think that's, like, the main thing. Like, they're struggling to defend the movement that was built off of a process that is inherently colonial. It is settler colonialism. And in the modern day, you have people literally, they're like scattering to try to figure out, oh, how am I going to defend this? You can't. The only way that you can defend it is if you're willing to lie. And you'll often notice that with Zionism and with Zionists, their main thing is, like, how can we change?
Every accusation is a confession.
100%. Like, that's, like, that is one of my favorite things. Like one of their main thing that they have to do with, like, you know, trying to defend their state and how it came to be is to just deny the things that they talked about. And you'll often see, they'll be like, oh, well, no, they didn't mean it was colonization. Like, they just said that. It's like, are you trying to convince me that they didn't know what colonization was, and then they called it colonization and did exactly what colonization was? Like, mm-hmm. I don't get how that works. Again, like, it goes back, who are you trying to convince? And again, it's like the whole process of, you know, Zionism, which gaslighting.
Well, I think let's give them some, like, you know, cool, like, material proof of, like, what they said. Mm-hmm. So if you want to start, Lina, talking about, like, I got a couple too, so maybe talk about mm-hmm. some of the quotes that, like, these Zionists, these, like, people, what'd you call them,
founding fathers,
founding fathers, and what they said about, like, what they said about how Palestine, mm-hmm. basically, how they're going to come to do it, and how they were going to, how they expropriated, I hate that word, bro, the land and the resources, and mm-hmm. we're trying to do it. So if you can do that, that would be lovely. And tell us who these people are. Are they just random 100%. People? Do they have power?
100%. I definitely do want to talk about the main, as I call them, the founding fathers of Israel, and how they spoke about, you know, how they were going to colonize the Palestinian people and replace them, right? And my favorite person to reference in this is a man named Zev Jabotinsky. And the reason why he's one of my favorites is because...
Oh, you mean the guy who used to dress up as, like, Mussolini, like, mm-hmm. for fun?
Yes.
Like, oh my God. The Italian fascist, that guy?
Him. That is him. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys will often notice throughout this podcast is a lot of these, you know, founding members of Israel were very comfy and cozy with a lot of fascists and, you know, people who are frowned upon historically. But, you know, that's aside the point, I guess. But I mean, the reason why we all love to, like, you know, point towards him is because he wrote a beautiful paper, and it's called Texts Concerning Zionism, quote unquote, The Iron Wall. And this was written in 1923, like I said, by Zev Jabotinsky. And in this entire article is basically discussing how, the Zionists want to colonize Palestine and how they're going to be met with resistance. They recognize how, you know, they recognize how, like, there's no indigenous group that is willing to be colonized. And I think that my favorite line from this, and it's under a segment in the article called Voluntary Agreement Not Possible. And he basically goes on to say, I'm going to read it and you guys will get the gist.
I love when you read these quotes. They're my favorite thing.
They're my favorite thing too. Like, again, you'll see how we're all confused why they're trying to gaslight us. But anyways, he goes on to talk about colonization in other countries and how he's comparing his movement to those colonizations. So he says, voluntary agreement, not possible. And then he goes, my readers have a general idea of the history of colonization in other countries. I suggest that they consider all the precedents with which they are acquainted and see whether there is one solitary instance of any colonization being carried on with the consent of the native population. There is no such precedent. The native populations, civilized or uncivilized, have always stubbornly resisted the colonists, irrespective of whether they are civilized or savage. And then he goes on to say, like, it doesn't matter how you behave as a colonizer, you know. And then he says, and he compares, and I quote, to the Pilgrim Fathers, the first real pioneers of North America, the people with the most high morality. And he says, you know, they colonized North America, and their goal, you know, they were moral in their goals. They didn't want to do anything bad, didn't have bad intentions.
But it sounds like the people who say, like, colonization is a good thing.
I mean, that's exactly what he's saying, but he's saying, even if you have good intentions, though, and he's arguing that Zionists do have good intentions, there's no civilized or savage, as he said, population that will be okay with being colonized. And I think, like, this is like so important to, you know, our modern day conversations about Palestine and the way that we're, like, everyone is reacting to being colonized, right? We are all in a, as Hiba said, a, you know, the pre-colonial. We all live in, like, a post-colonial, like, state right now in, like, you know, Canada or the West or whatever. But in Palestine, it's like an active colonization process. And he's speaking about how these people will resist the colonists, right? And he quotes, he says something very, like, important. And he says, whether they will continue to resist so long as they have a single solitary hope of being able to rid itself of its colonizer. And he says this inside of his, segment about Arabs are not fools and all natives resist colonists. So essentially what he's doing in this paper is he's basically saying, hey guys, like, and he's talking to his Zionist friends. He's not really talking to, like, your average person. He's talking to his, the other founding members of Israel. And he's saying, well, you know, we have a goal to colonize, and just know people are going to resist us. And yeah, I think he's one of the most important people.
Yeah, and I mean, the quotes didn't end right with the establishment of the Israeli state. Menachem Begin came out in 1982 and said that the Palestinians are beasts walking on two legs. We must eradicate all of them and take their place. He actually, this was a speech in the Knesset back in 1982.
Wow.
Yeah, Golda Meir in 1969, or I'm sorry, not Golda Meir, my apologies. Here is the quote. David Ben-Gurion quoted this in 1937, and another Golda Meir quoted it in 1909, reaffirming it, said, we must expel Arabs and take their place. This is another thing when we say it didn't end, it didn't stop. 1948, when they did have their cute little Jewish state, it doesn't end, it continues to happen. And there's 100%. There's more quotes of them continuously saying, you know, we have Israeli general Khaled, I believe his name is, in 1972. He talked to Haaretz and he said, the thesis that the danger of genocide was hanging over us in June 1967 and that Israel was fighting for its physical existence is only a bluff, which was born and developed after this war. We will continue to try and remove the Arabs, in quotations, and take their place. Mm-hmm. Again, it doesn't end when they get what they want. And I feel like this is a very important note to make, specifically when we're talking about modern times, when they say you guys didn't accept a peace state, or you could have had a state if you did 1, 2, 3. Well, we did. We accepted multiple things, but we don't have anything that you're giving to us because you continuously want more. And you are here for the long term. You want to replace all of the Palestinians and put your people in here.
It's that whole idea where they're like continuously, again, gaslighting people into believing that in their colonial process that they actually have room for the Palestinian people, and they have a solution for them.
No, I'll tell you, like, do you guys know who, like, Moshe Dayan is?
Moshe Dayan. Ugh.
Who was the Israeli military chief of staff, and then later he was the minister of defense. And he says, "We came here to a country that was populated by Arabs, and we are establishing a Hebrew, that is, a Jewish state here. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either."
Wow.
And this was in 1969. This is from Haaretz.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, and go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry, no, go ahead, Bob.
No, baby, go.
It truly bothers me when, like, I hear the Zionists in 2025 saying, "We never wanted to take your place. All we wanted to do is share this land," when we have more than 100 quotes from their founding fathers, like Lena loves to say, and from even afterwards. And they continuously, still till this day, quote these. It truly, I don't know, it irks me as a Palestinian when I hear this.
Well, 100%.
Honestly, as we're seeing, like, not only do we have the main goal of Zionism, which was reiterated more than we can even count. Like, we can name you all the people, but I don't think we could read you everything that they spoke about when they're talking about their goals and intentions to colonize Palestine. But, like, I'll name you just a few people off the top of my hand. David Ben-Gurion, Joseph Weitz, a leader and founder of he was the president of the Jewish Colonization Fund, which was used to literally colonize Palestine. It was a fund of whatever. It's important, but again, we cannot probably reach every single point about every single leader and what they said. But the reality is, it is inherent to their movement to colonize Palestine, and these writings specifically. What you guys are like, what we're all talking about right now, where we see them again try to convince us that there was no colonization. Kind of, one of my favorite things is to point out how a very important man, David Ben-Gurion, Prime Minister of Israel.
Was he just only a founding father, or was he in charge of something, some like military organization?
Oh yeah, Ben-Gurion, as we may or may not know, we obviously all know he's the Prime Minister of Israel, the very first one, but he was, you know, one of the leaders of the Haganah, and, you know, the Haganah, and as we know, the Haganah, Lehi, Stern, Irgun, these were all the defined at the time. Ben-Gurion, one of the founding fathers of Israel, he has a lot of titles, this guy, a leader of a terrorist organization called the Haganah, which was literally, you know, one of the most important members regarding Operation Dalet, which, you know, the main goal of Operation Dalet was to expel as many Palestinians as they could. And I think, you know, Hiba can go deeper into that.
I was going to say, was that before or after? Like, wasn't that before? Obviously, it was like after the State of Israel, right? Like, because the Nakba, right? You would assume that, as Zionists think, and they say that, oh, this was after you guys already invaded us. Is that true? Yeah.
No, it's absolutely not true. We see Operation Dalet
again.
What? Oh my God. That will be a common theme, guys. Every single freaking thing that comes out of their mouth, for some reason, it's a lie. I guess it's gotten them somewhere this far, but you know. But as we know, like Operation Dalet specifically was the method that was used, one of the many methods that was used in order to, you know, expel that population in order to make room for the new settler population, the Jews, at the time. So very important. But David Ben-Gurion specifically, he did something post 48, as Hiba said. They're always trying to convince us of something else. And he actually had a goal after, you know, Israel was created as a state, to essentially rewrite the history. And I'm not joking when I say that. This was something that was considered a focal point post-Israel development as a state. And it was, there's a great paper written on it. It's called, I'm going to quickly, oops, I'm going to quickly plug it for you guys. You guys can find it on Haaretz, but there's a great paper on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, something about plan Dalit on D, right? This was the fourth plan because there was plan A, B, C. They were all chucked out the window until they confirmed
plan D. Because Dalit is like D, right? Dalit is D in Hebrew, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about how it coincides and what, like, why are we talking about all of this? Why are we yapping away about all of these quotes and stuff? How does it coincide with what settler colonialism is? So Hiba, if you want to go ahead with plan D.
Yeah, like, so like it's important to remember, like, the people that we're quoting aren't like randoms, right? Like, they're people who actually have, like, who had the systemic mm-hmm. power, who had, like, the administrative, systemic, military power to accomplish what they were saying. So, like, mm-hmm. yesterday, I was like, listen, I was like, I heard this argument, and it was like, well, you know, it's not colonization, or, like, when, like, in order to bring a quote about, like, how, like, they were quite literally calling it colonization, and then the response would be like, oh, well, it's not, you know, they meant it differently back then. Right? Or it's not what it was, like, the definitions change. However, like, it doesn't matter whether, like, the definition one, like, just first and foremost, did not change. But colonization, what it meant in the 1900s, is still what it means today. But it's not that they just said the word colonization. They actively participated and, like, did colonization. Like, it's not mm-hmm. like that they didn't have the power to not do what they were going to do, right? So when you see, like, Plan Dalit specifically, you see that it was a military strategy developed by the Haganah, which was the Zionist paramilitary force, in March 1948, prior to May, prior to, like, the establishment of the state, prior to the Arab-Israeli War. It was a key component in the implementation of the Nakba, and as we all know, like, 750,000 Palestinians were forcibly displaced after this, and over 554 villages, I believe, were destroyed. Like, no recollection, no records of them existing. I mean, there are records.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, the objectives of this, right? They did so to secure Jewish control over the areas designated for the Jewish state in the 47 partition plan that, one, wasn't implemented, and two, was just a recommendation, right? Mm-hmm. And they also did more, they also expanded beyond these borders. And they, like...
Sorry, but, like, within that UN partition, right? What was given to the Jews, what was, you know, in the partition, when they said that 56% of this is going to be the quote-unquote Jewish state, didn't they say, you know, the Arabs, quote-unquote, or Palestinians have a right to stay there? No one should be removed from that land, right?
I mean, that is their common narrative right now.
Yep, they said, exactly. They cleared villages and cities and prevented the return of the expelled Palestinian people or the population. And so, like, the tactics that they used to do so was, like, obviously mass expelled the Palestinian citizens or civilians. They destroyed villages to prevent mm-hmm. them from returning. Because, like, why would you, like, what would you return to? You would return to nothing. And then guess what? We kind of proved to them, like, nah, we'll return to nothing and we'll rebuild. They like, specifically, like, they did, like, massacres and psychological warfare. So, like, the Deir Yassin, we know about the Deir Yassin massacre, where over 100 men, women, and children were killed, raped, and, like, horrifically tortured by the Zionist militias. And, like, according mm-hmm. to the Zionists, like, there's this report on Adala, which is, like, ADALAH, which is, like, it's like a legal organization in Israel proper mm-hmm. where they kind of, like, go to the, like, Supreme Court, and they kind of subpoena the Israeli government to kind of, like, to release mm-hmm. records that were sealed. So this one of the ones, yeah, and one of their things, there's, like, a report done by the Haganah about, like, reasons for Arab expulsion, and in this they talk about the psychological warfare. They literally went to, like, the my village, right, like, my grandpa's village of Ramle, and it's Ramle and Akka, and, like, they were, like, literally on loudspeakers saying leave before what happened in Deir Yassin happened to you, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what they were doing. And, like, I read this in a paper, actually, the other day. And, like, You guys, something you guys are not going to know about me, but you will soon find out, is that I get into these like specific, ultra specific niche topics of Palestinian like history or like the Zionist colonization of Palestine. And the one that I've been most recently obsessed with is Palestinian women's like bodies and their agencies. And we're definitely having like another episode about that, so stay tuned. But like, for example, I'm going to read from this paper directly. And it talked about how, sorry, one sec, y'all. So it says that like during the Nakba, during Deir Yassin, we see that I'm going to read from her paper and I'm going to quote and cite the paper, but it says, in 1948, when Jewish troops started to occupy Palestinian villages, they spread rumors about their brutality as a way to frighten villagers and so to take over the villages. Though a lot of rape incidents were reported, rumors about rape cases were far higher than the figures of rapes that actually happened. Many Palestinians ran away from their villages worried about their honor. And for some men, saving their women from rape was more important than defending their homes. Right? And and the paper, you guys, is one of my favorite. It's,
oh my god, is this the paper mm-hmm. where it says it talks about how the men, even in their writing, right, they talk about, yes, Palestine in feminine form. I love this paper. Yes. Heba, yeah, like, literally best paper you've showed me.
It's not this paper, it's not that paper, but it is one that's adjacent to it. So this one is called Palestinian Women's Bodies as a Battlefield by Shahid Wadi. It's an amazing paper. Like I said, like, we're going to host an episode where it's just going to be me like yapping about this subject because it's genuinely one of my favorite subjects to talk about. Body and agency and like national narratives when it comes to Palestinian feminism and or the Palestinian woman's experiences. I don't know, one of my favorite topics regardless. Mm-hmm. So this is all just like a little cute little deep dive just to talk about like the psychological warfare that they were inflicting on these Palestinian, like on the Palestinian people, right? Mm-hmm. As well as like they got, like, you guys know that they actually like they sieged and they like used starvation tactics. Mm-hmm. And like led in Ramle specifically, in this, like, when they expelled like people from Ramle, they only gave them one way out, and it was like walking for, mm-hmm, like, I think it was like
48 till the hours. Next
48 hours. It's, mm-hmm, kind of the Trail of Tears is what I kind of describe it to people who don't know about it. And over 30,000 people died just in that walk, just, right?
Yeah.
That's so insane.
Mm-hmm. And Ilan, you know, go ahead. Sorry, baby.
I'm sorry, baby. You know what is kind of sadistic as well? I don't know. As Palestinians, we're always thinking about everything that the Palestinians have gone through. Mm-hmm. The fact that their motives, their methods have not changed at, right, all. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're looking at modern day Gaza or modern day Jenin, this is exactly what they're doing.
They were literally dropping like pamphlets, like, mm, in like outside of Rafah, in villages outside of Rafah, saying leave or else so what happened in Rafah will happen to you, huh?
Yeah, right. Same thing that happened in Deir Yassin. And I always talk about this documentary. It's phenomenal because you hear both sides. It's called 1948 Creation or Catastrophe. And you have Zionist soldiers telling you, like, yes, we did Deir Yassin. It was horrible. We had to burn the evidence at night. Mm-hmm. And after that, we were driving around in our military car saying leave or what happens in Deir Yassin will happen to you. And then you hear the Palestinians say, we were so frightened after hearing about Deir Yassin that we had no other choice but to run for fear of our children, for fear of our women or whatever else. And that's, it's very heartbreaking.
100%.
So when we talk, like, all we bring all of this, and I know we all went on like kind of like a rant, right? However, this is all to show like the intentions and like the actions of the Zionist, like, of Zionist settler colonization in Palestine. Like, let's kind of like bring it back, right? Where we see the characteristics of like settler colonization in Palestine was land appropriation. You see specifically how the JNF, the Jewish National Fund, systematically acquired Palestinian land and prohibited its resale to Arabs or the property law. A second characteristic is elimination and replacement of indigenous people. We see the systematic destruction of Palestinian villages, more, right, we already noted more than 500 yep. erased after 48. We see the denial of the right of return for Palestinian refugees while facilitating and oftentimes forcing Jewish immigration. And like the third, one of like the third characteristics of settler colonization is the is legal structures to maintain settler dominance. And you see how the British mandate policies helped facilitate Jewish immigration and land acquisition. And specifically, like with the 1952, the Israeli citizenship law that granted citizenship to Jews worldwide, but denied it to Palestinian refugees. And we have like academic theories and like Ilan Pape, Lorenzo Veracini, Patrick Wolf, what's his name, Benny Morris, Walid Khaledi, all these people have written about settler colonization in Palestine and what it means. And so let me just like kind of go through my notes real quick and so we can kind of move it back. But one of the things that when the Zionist narratives that are going to they'll try to push back on is because one thing that you kind of see, right, within settler colonization is that you need a quote unquote mother,
a host country, as they say.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I couldn't think of the word.
There's a host country. No, a mother country, host country, they all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in reference to like Palestinian and like the Palestinian situation, right? Like, sure, yes, we do need settler colonialism, it's not a requirement, it's not an element, it is just often associated with a mother country, and it's basically a distant imperial power that sponsors or facilitates a settlement. So we see British colonialism in North America, and we saw Dutch and British colonization in South Africa and French Algeria, but the case of Zionist settler colonialism in Palestine is why I keep saying the word unique, is because it lacks a single traditional mother country. Instead, it was like mothers, right? Like it wasn't mother. It was mothers. That's
mother.
Because it was supported and backed by a network of imperial powers and global Zionist organizations. So then like rather than a single nation state, oh my God, I sounded like, what's her name? Muse and Uncut Gems. Oh my God. Anyways, she's pro-Palestinian, by the way. We love her. What's her name?
Julia. We say it again.
The girl who's like, yeah, I was like, this guy's Muse and Uncut Gems.
Oh, I love her.
Julia X, yeah.
Oh my God,
it's
going to
bother me. Somebody look it up for me.
Hang on. I'm Julia Roberts or something? No, not Roberts.
Not Julia Roberts. Oh my God. Uncut Gems. Julia Fox.
I love her. She's funny.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, she's pro-Palestinian.
Yeah. It makes things easier to follow if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, so the mothers. When you see like a mothers, yeah, when you see like, so mothers. For example, we're gonna start with like the Brits, right? So you see like we see that like I said, rather than a single colonial power backing Zionist settlements, we saw multiple imperial states that played a role in facilitating Jewish migration and state building. So we see first the British Mandate. We see the Balfour Declaration that existed, and it was a statement, obviously, as we know, like by Britain, supporting a Jewish national home in Palestine, despite the fact that like we were over like what 95% of the population at the time. Under the British Mandate, we see Britain facilitating Jewish immigration and land acquisition, aiding settler expansion. They were crushing Palestinian revolts against the British Zionist collaboration. So, like from the Arab Revolt of 36 to 39, they crushed it. Them and the like British people, the Brits. Yeah, they don't even deserve it. The Brits, them and the Brits, like both. Like single-handedly worked together to crush the Arab like protests against the Zionist and like British rule. And then
they were all like very much non-violent in the early stages.
We should make another episode of like the about like the early days, because like you hear so much misinformation about like the 100%. Hebron and like all of these like events that are they are so misconstrued and like bastardized, because there's such a total retelling of history. Go ahead, Petra.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, how the the Brits, right, helped the Jewish Zionists back in the day during the protests, right, because there were protests, there were strikes back in 1936. Instead of listening to the population that you are mandating, they actually created under the British Army a separate entity of soldiers and had the Jewish Zionists be in control of that. And again, very telling with how their methods are now. What they did back then was they would go facilitate a curfew for the Arabs, quote unquote, and anyone who was out or about during that time, they would take them at night, blindfold them, and jail them. And again, very telling with what they do right now in the West Bank. Usually they go and arrest people at night. Yeah, and the British and all of these other mothers have helped the Zionist agenda flourish.
Right. I mean, this is like literally one of the most important things to point out, like the parallels between not only like other settler colonial movements, but like Israel in its early stages of Zionism, and, you know, and how they achieve ethnically cleansing over 80% of a population in order to facilitate their settler colonial movement. But the most interesting part is how they still are doing that till today, because in their eyes, it's still not complete. Where you'll often hear like Zionists try to convince us, oh, well, Zionism is over. Like, why do you guys keep calling us Zionists? No, it's not over. Your overall goals are still not there. You haven't defeated, as Zev Jabotinsky, you haven't defeated that single solitary hope of being able to turn Palestine into Israel. That single solitary spark of hope is so abundantly like available from not only Palestinians, but there is a global community of people that are just anti this settler colonial movement. But I think one of my favorite things to talk about regarding settler colonialism as a whole is how oftentimes in settler colonial movements, you'll have the indigenous population, which usually doesn't actually have a problem with these, you can call them settlers, doesn't have with like these people that maybe just want to move there and live alongside with them. Usually that's not the problem. And we even see it in America, right? Like in America, you have the Cherokees, and the Cherokees are actually originally a French settler group that came and, you know, settled alongside the indigenous people and lived alongside with them, right? So even in North America, you had groups of people that came there way before Christopher Columbus or whatever the hell, I'm not American, but whatever, him. he came, there was other people who were coming in and settling and living alongside the people. And, you know, the Palestinians will tell you more than enough, or sorry, can't tell you more than enough how much they were okay with people coming and living alongside with them on the land. And we always reference these groups, the Armenians, the Kurds, the Baha'is, the Jews that fled European persecution. And I'm not talking in the 40s, I'm talking in the 1800s. You saw a large group of Sephardic Jews find their way to the Middle East, to Palestine, to the Levant specifically, because there was no problem with people coming and actually living alongside with the indigenous population. But that key thing that keeps coming up is the intention to colonize, to settle, colonize and replace. And as Zev Jabotinsky said himself, like, no group would accept that on themselves. No group would accept that.
100%.
So this is the most important thing.
Right. And so, like I said, like earlier, like this matters, right? Because like this matters is because we need to understand like the implication of this for understanding like the quote unquote Israel-Palestine conflict, right? How Israel's colonial structure is a lot more decentralized. So like unlike French Algeria or British South Africa, where the colonizers remain politically connected to their mother country, Israel operates as an independent settler colonial state. And I know it's funny how you guys like, it's funny for me to say independent as if they don't rely on like a Western financial military aid. So yeah, but like, you know, it's still important to the point and how it, in like most decolonization struggles, like the native population could pressure the colonizer to leave, right? But in Palestine, unfortunately, there's no mother country to expel them back to. Right. We see Jews coming from Ukraine, from Poland, from Germany. We see them coming from Spain and Morocco and Syria and New York and South America, like it's just all over. Right. And so Israel is both the colonizer and the state itself, making, like, obviously resistance a lot more complex. And obviously we still do resist. And the role of, like, the global Zionist influences is, like, important because, like, unlike classic settler colonies, Israel maintains its expansionist policies through a global network of, like, diplomatic and financial backing. And so it does so to ensure its survival even without a direct colonial governance. Israel's settler colonialism is unique in that it didn't emerge from a single mother country, but instead it was supported by a coalition of Western imperial powers and transnational Zionist networks. And so if we kind of, like, move it back to, like, modern day, right, we can talk about how it's continuing to manifest in like, in various forms in present day, right? So we can talk about, like, the expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. It's a contemporary example of how this is manifested in today, in 2025. The settlements are often established on land expropriated. I said it.
You idiot.
Okay. I hate saying that word. Expropriated from Palestinians. And it leads to, like, further displacement and restrictions on Palestinian movement and access to resources. Even, like, today, right? Today is the 25th of January, right? And we are obviously in, like, ceasefire period. And today was the second wave of releasing the Palestinian hostages for the Israeli hostages. And of the list of, like, 200... the Palestinian hostages are set to be deported. So this is not another form, like, this is not because, like, deportation, but, like, Palestinians and our culture, we are very family oriented, right? We go where our family goes. And so it's not just 70 men or women who are going to be deported, it's 70 families. And Israel knows the implications of doing so, because now there are going to be less Palestinians living in the land. And this is done so intentionally and like I said, structurally and systematically, right? So, like, it's really important because, like, we can talk even about, like, the health impacts, right? So, like, the health disparities experienced by Palestinians, research shows that, like, settler colonialism is a fundamental determinant of health for Palestinians, and it influences various aspects of our lives, including, like, access to food, water, housing, and the systemic nature of these disparities underscores the need for an anti-colonial approach to health equity in the region. I just think it's really important that we have to make these, like, claims and be educated and know the facts about them when we make, like, claims about settler colonialism, and not that it really happened back in the day, that it's happening now actively as we speak. And that it's not just, like, a land forfeiture. It's not just property forfeiture or property seizing. It's quite literally doing so with the intent to rid these people. And, like, Lena, when we were talking before the episode, you mentioned one specific point.
I'd love to literally just about to get into it. I was literally like, oh, this is going to be a perfect way for us to segue into this. And it kind of goes perfectly with the context that we are currently living in, which is Israel, for the first time in forever, in its entire existence, is on trial for genocide. And this is, like, this is a focal point throughout history for the Palestinian history, because not only have we seen Israel get away with, you know, committing crimes against humanity for the past 100 years, and specifically as a state for 77 years, but we've seen, like, this idea of genocide as we know it be inherent to the topic that we're talking about, which is settler colonialism. We know that in terms of settler colonialism, it is impossible to achieve your goals of settler colonialism without having genocidal goals. As we said, the intention of a settler colony is to replace a population, get rid of its culture, and replace it. You don't want that indigenous group to be there. And we've seen it in America and Canada and in Australia. The goal is to genocide the people. And this is inherent to settler colonialism. And there's a great paper that talks about it, and it's called The Anatomy of Genocide. This is
I love that paper.
Absolutely amazing paper. And it's Francesca Albanese. She is a member of the UN. She's a special rapporteur of the UN. And she wrote a great paper about this to further reiterate, in terms of the anatomy of genocide, how
settler colonialism is inherent to genocide, and they go hand in hand. You cannot have settler colonialism without the goal of genocide. And it kind of brings us to, you know, the main point, which is how Israel is a settler colonial state. The main thing that I would want to talk about regarding this, like, settler colonial process and how it's inherent to genocide is the fact that I personally do not think that the genocide started on October 7th. I think that it's been an ongoing process. And this is something that we can see with every other settler colonial movement, every other, you know, I can't say every other genocide, but I can say every other settler colonial movement. It's a process. It doesn't happen in a day and a night. And we probably will do a segment on genocide specifically. But it's important just anyone listening to understand when it comes to settler colonization and the overall project of colonization, settler colonization specifically, you will see genocide. And that is what the Palestinians are currently experiencing and have been experiencing since the in existence of the state of Israel. So yeah, if anyone wants to jump in regarding that, it could also be a good way for us to,
like, it wasn't just Francesca. Like, there's also been other academics who have talked about this. Mahmoud, what's his name? Mahmoud. Oh my God, why can't I think of his name right now? Goodness, regardless.
It's like if you search up, if you just want to get like a surface level understanding of settler colonialism, there's not one, like, anyone who has studied settler colonialism that will.
Mahmoud Mamdani. Oh my God, fine. Mamdani. Sorry, I was going to bother me. Mahmoud Mamdani and Patrick Wolf. And yeah. Patrick Wolf both have talked about, like, 100%. They argue that settler colonialism is inherently genocidal. I wasn't talking. Go ahead, baby girl.
Sorry. But yeah, like, I love, because, you know, we're Palestinians in diaspora. Most of our listeners are probably going to be in North America. We can see it within Canada and America, the United States. They came here. They genocided the Native Americans, the Native people in Canada, and they settled that area. It does go hand in hand. They did it in Australia as well. So to try and say, no, we're not committing a genocide now, but you have. Mm-hmm. You have been doing it for 76 years now. Genocide also, like, ethnic cleansing is a part of genocide. So while you are removing people from their land during the Nakba, during the 1967 war, even now, Sheikh Jarrah, we have internally displaced people within Palestine who cannot go back to their villages. All of that goes hand in hand within genocide and within settler colonialism.
100%. Okay, Jinx.
Oh, okay.
Yomi, okay.
Okay. I think it's important, like, all of this is to say, like, it's important because, like, right, settler colonialism, we see it as an ongoing process. It's not like a historical event. It didn't happen like, oh, it was back in the day, because Zionists tend to, like, write off, like, the massacres and the atrocities that occurred to us. They always, like, write it off like, oh, that was so long ago, that was back in the day. No, it's occurring now. It's actively occurring now. And we see how it's manifesting, like Lena amazingly put it, is through genocide. And we see how international law remains politicized, how major powers are protecting Israel from accountability. And, like, this is kind of to conclude, basically, to say that, like, Palestinian resistance, both armed and nonviolent, is framed within a larger struggle against settler colonialism and, I would say, potential but active genocide. It's important to remember how we see that, like, the Palestinian resistance challenges attempts to ethnic cleanse, to genocide, to massacre, by imposing this ideology or the framework of, like, survival as resistance. So, like, the refusal to leave, the actions of rebuilding homes after demolitions and maintaining cultural heritage, they're all acts of defiance and resistance against a system aiming for eventual erasure. And yeah, so, like, that's, I think, extremely important to kind of maybe conclude this entire podcast episode about, is the fact that, like, as long as the entity that is Israel continues to manifest its original goals, intentions and motive goals of genocide and ethnic cleansing and separatism, there will continue to be resistance against that. As long as it exists, as long as it's Palestinians, there's one Palestinian left, we will continue to resist. We will continue to fight back against this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to kind of conclude with that, if any of you
agree. I think that 100% agree. I think that's like the best way to conclude it. Recognize, anyone who's listening, you need to recognize what Israel is. And this is why I think we started off with settler colonialism as our beginning topic, is like, just recognize that Israel is a settler colonial state. And if you can recognize that, then you would recognize how the Palestinians, in their resistance, in their existence, are here to, you know, fight with every solitary hope that they have, as Zebrzebotinsky said.
Every freaking cell that we have in
every
our body.
Every single cell that we have to, you know, prevent our erasure. We want to exist inside of our land. And we can always go into in the further episodes and talk about how
I think what she's going to say, the main point is that Palestinian resistance within a settler colonial and genocidal like framework is not just about liberation. Because it is about liberation, but it's about survival in the face of an ongoing campaign to erase Palestinian identity, history, and physical presence. The fight against forced displacement, legal apartheid, demographic warfare ensures that the settler colonial project does not achieve its ultimate goal, which is the complete disappearance of Palestine and Palestinians.
100%. I mean, I feel like this is part of the reason when you hear it, like, you know, the jokes we tell about Arabs, like, oh, Lebanese is XYZ. How did you know I was Palestinian? And the person who's Palestinian is decked out in like a kufiya, Palestine shirt, has the Zed Zatun with his hand. This is our defiance specifically. And I just want to wrap it up with like the diaspora, specifically within the diaspora, because the people, the Palestinians inside of Palestine, they're fighting by being there, just by existing there, versus us in diaspora. We have to go that extra mile and say, no, we are Palestinian. We're here. Like, everything we do is for Palestine. And yeah, I feel like that is a big part of resistance.
1000%.
Perfect. So I think, you know, we've completed the second episode. And just like always, we're going to read out a martyr throughout this. Again, we do all of this. We do our advocating. We speak about Palestine, and it's to honor our martyrs who have been killed, whether it's in Gaza or the West Bank, whether it's during the genocide or prior. This is what we're here for. Today's martyr is going to be Zakaria Hamid Yahya Barbach, I believe. Unfortunately, he's 15 years old, so a minor. He was killed actually on the second day.
A baby.
He was killed on the second day of the ceasefire. So while he was walking around near Al Awda Square in central Rafah, he was finally able to breathe. You know, after 15 months of a genocide, he hears that a ceasefire is happening. The ceasefire has been enacted. The hostages from both sides have been given out. And he's finally saying, thank you, I have survived. If we look at how many bombs have been dropped onto Gaza in the past 15 months, it's basically, he survived the equivalent of 4 atomic bombs being dropped on him. He was finally able to eat. He was finally able to drink clean water. And he was finally able to meet his brother, his older brother in Rafah. They were separated during the genocide. Unfortunately, though, his celebration was cut very short, because on January 20th of 2025, the Zionist entity began shooting the people down in Rafah, breaking the ceasefire in technicality. Zakaria was killed instantly. His brother tried to run and to help him, but they started shooting at anyone who would come close. Another child was also injured while attempting to retrieve Zakaria's body. And another Palestinian inside of Gaza was killed on January 20th. So, you know, even though there is a quote unquote ceasefire, this is their methods. This is what they do. And Zakaria, unfortunately, he survived the genocide and he was killed trying to meet with his brother. There's videos of it. I will state right here, it's very traumatic. So please view it at your own discretion. And if you want to read more about any of the our martyrs throughout this genocide, please go to Quora. You can search Humanize Gaza. We post there every day. Usually every day we have 1 to 5 martyrs posted. So please head that way to view it. And thank you, everyone. Thank you so much to our beautiful co-hosts and for our very first episode with them. You guys did amazing. I hope it was a beautiful episode. Amazing.
It was really good. I'm proud of us.
Free Palestine.
And by the way, free guys, Palestine. Like we advocate on like a daily basis, but this is something new for us. So
I'm excited. I think we can turn this. This is gonna be big. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone. Tune in next episode.
Tune in.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.